You are Locked On Lakers, your daily podcast on the Los Angeles Lakers. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Everybody to the Locked On Lakers podcast. I'm Anthony Irwin. I am joined, as always, by Harrison Fagan. Two shows in a row, you guys. Two shows in a row. This is incredible. Harrison, thank you very much for blessing us with your presence on the airwaves.
No problem, Anthony. I'm it was almost a no-go for me. I was game time decision, but I'm glad I was able to get out here. It feels good to be. I'm healthy. In relative terms. I'm gonna gut it out.
You got to be a better podcaster every day. You got to get better every day.
Exactly. Like some injuries, you just got to push through. Yeah. So
there's a difference. There's a difference between discomfort and injury. And
yes.
Yeah. Speaking of discomfort and injuries, Lonzo Ball made his return to practice today, and with that came the dogs freaking out about how excited they are to have Lonzo back. There was a lot of barking from Lakers practice that made both Harrison and me kind of wonder, what the hell, guys? We're doing this again. So we're going to talk about that. And then last night, we started talking about the defense, and James Worthy brought some stuff up on Spectrum Sportsnet. I did a little bit more thinking about it and then eventually wrote about that kind of thing for Lakers Outsiders. You can find that on LakersOutsiders.com. So we're going to talk about Lonzo and then the defense. That's how this show is going to go. As always, make sure you guys are following the show on Megaphone/Panoply, iTunes, TuneIn, Stitcher, Today's Fast Break, Spotify, Alexa, Lakers Nation, where Harrison writes, Lakers Outsiders, where I write. Harrison is at HM Fagan. I am at Anthony Irwin, LA. Let's go ahead and get into this. Harrison, Lonzo gets back, and we immediately start hearing about, oh my God, he's shooting the ball so much better, and teammates are saying how God himself walked into the Lakers practice facility and blessed Lonzo Ball's awkward jumper. You and I have done a lot of talking this season.
Well, Anthony, just real quick, not to cut you off, but to be fair, they are comparing him to playing with Tyler Ennis. So
yeah, fair
point. That might be skewing their – they're like, oh my God, Lonzo was so good at not being Tyler today. It was crazy. He was able to do more than just get to the basket out of a pick and roll and like literally have that be his only skill.
Yeah. I heard one of the quotes, I forget which one it was, and it would make sense that they would want to send this out anonymously, but it was something to the account of like, holy crap, it was so cool when Lonzo turned the corner. It said Ball on the back of his jersey and not Ennis. It was so nice to see that.
I think that's probably a big part of it. It's just like we've talked about this before, but the guys that he's replacing are like the drop off between him and the next man up is so great that even though Lonzo is far from a perfect player yet, he is still at least a helpful one. And the Lakers just don't have that when he's not in there.
Well, that was the point I was making with Matt Moore when he came on the show, was that no, I don't think right now Lonzo is any kind of transcendent talent that because he is gone, everything went to crap for the Lakers. I don't think that's the case. I think it's more of a fact of Lonzo leaves and your starting point guard becomes Tyler Ennis. And then behind him, you get Alex Caruso minutes. And then it forces Jordan Clarkson into a spot that he doesn't necessarily do very well at, having to worry about setting up the offense and not just scoring with the second unit. And all of these things created this snowball effect that led to some of the worst basketball we've seen in the last 5 years. And I mean, it was right up there with any of the most depressing stretches in actual Lakers history, the last six games especially. And then it started to get that way, I guess, 12 games ago. But
so, like, with all of that context,
all of it,
like, at what point are we being intellectually dishonest when we're just, like, believing? I mean, I don't know that everybody takes everything that the Lakers say about Lonzo at face value, right? Because I think on some level they're his teammates, so of course they're going to pump him up and they're going to say nice things about him. They aren't going to be like, oh, you know, Lonzo was really mediocre today in his return. Like,
he's
just
all right.
clanked a few jumpers, but, you know, made some winning plays. There were a couple good things. He wasn't all bad. Like, you guys are too hard on him sometimes. Like, I know he's not great, but he's all right. Like, nobody's going to say that. And so what they're going to say when he comes back is, number one, their sample size is skewed by how bad his replacements are, so that probably increases their opinion of him. But then the other thing is that they aren't going to trash a teammate, and so they kind of have to say these nice things. But then, like, if we just keep believing them, then it's like we're being the dumb ones at that point, you know? Like, yeah. We can acknowledge, we can all be smart about this and acknowledge that there are things that Lonzo does to help the team, but then also acknowledge that he is not Jesus. And, like, there is a middle ground there between Lonzo Ball, helpful NBA player, and Lonzo Ball bust, and then, like, where Lonzo exists is in the middle of Lonzo Ball bust and the way that Lonzo's teammates talk about him. Like, he's going to get at some point probably to the level where, like, how his teammates talk about him, but he's not there yet. And, you know, I think so when they say all of these nice things about him at practice, I don't think that they're lying. I just think that they notice the good things and they're going to talk about the good things. And but then that doesn't mean that we have to just believe it and assume that, okay, he's back from his injury, the Lakers are going to be perfect now, or, like, he's going to be an amazing point guard and not randomly, like, go 2-for-12 in one game. Like, there's a middle ground here.
You and I have done a lot of talking about the effect of this on the conversation surrounding Lonzo and the negative side of it, how it's led to pulling apart and picking apart parts of his game that don't really need to be picked apart, because the reality is, like you said, he remains in the middle of, and that's where reality always remains, is in the middle between the two sides of every story. And so what we're going to do here in a second is talk about ways that we can kind of extricate ourselves from the stupidity, whether it's how crazy people talk about him in practices. Remember at the beginning of the season, we were hearing about how well his scrimmage teams were doing. And then
they were undefeated, Anthony, in case you forgot. They were undefeated.
Undefeated. So we're going to talk about a little bit about that. Make sure, though, if you would like to advertise locally on this podcast or look, we've built good relationships. I come from a sales background anyway. So if you would like to advertise on this podcast, make sure you guys send emails to lakerslockedon@gmail.com. We can give you all kinds of numbers to back up why advertisers choose to advertise on the network and why some teams or local businesses have had success marketing on other shows. So again, that's lakerslockedon@gmail.com. Let's take a quick break. So we just made fun of the Lakers undefeated or Lonzo Ball's undefeated scrimmage record at the beginning of the season. And then, like you just said, we got right back to it with, wow, look how great Lonzo Ball's shot looked. And look how long, how many shots in a row he was making.
Anthony, I don't know if you saw it, but there was a video where he made like 5 straight jumpers went out on Twitter. Like 5 in a row.
Holy moly.
Who's gonna stop that? He's unstoppable now.
He made one shot from out of bounds, I saw, which is illegal. So, look, I'm not going to be...
He's so good, he transcends the rules.
Well, I'm not going to be... I don't like being that guy, but that would be a turnover. I thought I would point that out. That if you shoot the ball from out of bounds and it goes in,
you're a buzzkill.
Yeah, that's just a turnover. That's I'm sorry.
This is why I disguise my voice on the podcast. I don't want to be like associated with you. This is why I don't show up, and when I do, I disguise my voice.
So, but again, though, it gets back to at some point we should be able to think critically about what's going on here, right? Like you said, like you alluded to, teammates are going to be thrilled to have Lonzo Ball back because one, he is fun to play with. Two, because he isn't Tyler Ennis. And three, because he isn't Tyler Ennis. And as that is the case, and because these guys are teammates and they're excited to get an important piece of the puzzle back, then we should be able to recognize why they might be, that why the quotes that come from them might be a little over the top. And yet, with that being said, the other side of this coin uses that as an excuse to be jackasses about the way that we talk about Lonzo Ball. So, Harrison, I'm gonna, this might be like me asking you to solve world hunger, but how can we make this conversation about Lonzo Ball not too positive, not too negative, but somewhere right there in the middle?
I mean, we can make our conversation like that just by having that conversation, but can we change the overall way that Lonzo Ball is, the overall just beyond stupid way that Lonzo Ball is argued about on the internet as a whole? No, we cannot change that because the internet as a whole is stupid and evil and only exists to cause all of us misery. So that's where I'm at. Was that the dose of positivity that you needed? But I guess like what we can do, if this is going to, like, we can talk about him honestly. We cannot fall for this stuff when it comes out that Lonzo Ball's team went undefeated in a scrimmage or that Lonzo Ball hit five straight jumpers in practice, and understand that that does not mean that Lonzo Ball is going to be an all-star when he next sets foot on an NBA floor. Like, we have to be honest about this stuff and understand that he's a rookie. He has very clear weaknesses and he has very clear strengths. And to be honest, he's pretty good to average at everything but the shooting thing. And so if you just keep that, but the shooting thing is a very real weakness, and that's going to cause him real problems and going to make it easier for teams to take away the other things. But he's a rookie. Again, he's a rookie. He's 20 years old. This stuff is going to, he's not at his peak right now. And he's only going to get better at the other things. You would assume that his shot is going to start to come around. It was starting to come around before he got injured. And so we can just acknowledge all of this context and understand, yes, Lonzo Ball is still a very, very promising prospect without, you know, saying Lonzo Ball is a very, very good NBA player right now. Lonzo Ball is an okay NBA player. And for a rookie, that's pretty good.
I agree with all of that. We should be okay to just stick with the story about Lonzo Ball being okay. But no headline has ever sold itself on okay, right?
Like, no, Lonzo Ball, quote, okay, end quote, at practice today.
Yeah, I don't think that'll generate the clicks.
Lonzo Ball looked aight.
Also at practice today, and we're gonna go ahead. There's nothing I can really add to what Harrison said there. I agree with all of it. We need to do better at thinking critically about this stuff when it comes out.
We need to be the change that we want to see in the podcasting.
So what we're going to do is we're going to leave it at Lonzo Ball is okay.
Yeah, he's all right.
He's all right.
He's going to be fine.
Yeah. Also at practice today, Pete Zayas of Laker Film Room asked an actual meaningful question, which is something that doesn't happen often enough, in my opinion. But he had an exchange with Luke Walton, partially because his podcast partner, Darius Soriano, wanted this question asked. So I'm just going to read the exchange, and then I'm going to let that lead into the discussion that I was going to have about the defense. Are you ready?
Never been more ready, Anthony.
All right. Pete, you guys started off the season very strong on the defensive end, but there's been some of that defensive slippage. Luke, some or a lot, perhaps. You've been trying new things. A few games ago, you were blitzing pick and rolls. You had Julius drop in a drop coverage last night. Are you in a place where you're kind of searching for a solution to get that defensive mojo back? And then here's Luke's full quote. Well, we're searching for should we do this where you read this in the voice that you happen to be in last night?
I do not have that mic right now.
Ah,
so
that's
can't.
Too bad. All right. Well, we're searching for what's best for our group. So we have injuries, and the injuries, there's been different lineups throughout the season. We had a first unit and a second unit, and we knew what they did really well, and we knew what their strengths and weaknesses were. They executed those plans. Obviously, with lineup changes and different people having different strengths, it doesn't just affect one person when someone comes in or out of a lineup. It's the whole unit and how we can scheme against who we're playing against. And as the season goes on, we realize that for us to be a consistent elite defensive team, We have to have multiple coverages. We're a young team without a lot of practice time. The only way to get to really get reps at whether it's a drop, whether it's a blitz, and what our rotations look like out of a blitz is to do it in a game. Because of where we're at, a lot of times there's going to be some mistakes in that. We're a second late here, but we know that going into it, it's part of growing. It's getting reps. It's something game speed, seeing what it looks like on film, and doing it again and doing it again. So there's a lot of different things, but for sure, our number one priority has to be getting our defense headed back in the right direction. There's nothing that anybody can disagree with there. And that was one of the things that I touched on in my article. Here in a second, I'm going to detail some of the stuff. We're going to talk about what Luke's quote there was and whether or not we can ride with it in its full context. And then I'm going to add to it my thoughts and some of James Worthy's thoughts after the break. So that Luke quote that you just heard, Harrison, I just said there's nothing really to disagree with there. Would you roll with that?
Yeah, I mean, I think Luke, he understands what the problems are and he understands what it's going to take to fix it. I just think that on some level, the Lakers don't have the roster to plug all of these holes and fix all of these problems. Like, they're going to try things and they're going to try and set their guys up for the best success possible. But this was never expected to be a good defensive team. And they started out better than anyone predicted. And they aren't going to be able to get back to that, but maybe they can be average and maybe they can stay average. And they were 27th in the league in the month of December. And so maybe they can get back to being better than that. And so I think that should be the goal right now, is just like they should want to be out of the bottom 10 when the season is over. I think that that's a realistic goal, and their schedule is going to lighten up a little bit now. And Brook Lopez is coming back and Lonzo Ball is coming back. And there are going to be some things that they can do to start to turn things around on that end, but there are just a lot of flaws with this team.
So in at the beginning of the article, so basically the premise of my article is that this defense, the Lakers' defensive issues, now that we've seen them over the stretch of 5 years or so, and this was the point that James Worthy was making, is that regardless of coach, we're seeing some of the same effort questions surrounding this organization. And
it's D'Angelo Russell's fault.
Well, if you ask Brian Shaw, yeah, I would I would probably say so. But
D'Lo, you did it again.
So like I it got me to thinking, and it got me to wondering, okay, well then if this has been a trend, and I would probably agree with Worthy, right, that this has been a trend now for 5 years, that the defenses haven't been good. You would get games where, especially as the season rolls along and as each of the last five seasons rolled along, you would have games that you just said, well, they just quit on that one. Oh, that game didn't go very well. They opened well, and then they got punched in the face, and they just lied down, right? And that was one of the things that we were crediting this team with before Lonzo got hurt, was that these blowouts were not happening. And for, you know, they were playing hard enough to, regardless of their opponent, sometimes they would play down to it and they would make it more of a game than they necessarily had to. Sometimes they were playing up to an opponent and make that a closer game than anybody might have predicted. But as of late, the Lakers have been, for lack of a better term, it's looked as if they've quit, especially defensively. And I hate using that term. I hate questioning players' effort because it's intangible. There's no way to really back it up without a deep dive into film.
I agree. But I also think that we're less out of bounds doing that when the players themselves are accusing each other of quitting. Mm-hmm. And so that's one of those things where I think at that point we're well within our rights to – we aren't even assuming anymore. This is something that the players are saying is going on.
Yep. And I found it
Kyle Kuzma basically ethered the entire team last night. During his like little post game thing, that was as strong of comments as you're ever going to hear from a rookie.
He obviously didn't absolve himself of any of that guilt.
No, but he didn't. It wasn't pointing. He just like he laid it out there, and yeah. He was honest. He was like, "We quit. We did not play hard enough tonight. We got punched in the mouth." Like, this is not a direct quote, but he was saying they got punched in the mouth. They didn't respond, and they quit, and there was no excuse. And like it was kind of refreshing to hear a guy just say that.
It was, but it was also kind of funny seeing as he's probably the worst defensive player on the team.
I don't, it's not really lack of effort, though.
Right. Well, but it's just it was it it struck me as funny. Like,
I get what you're saying.
I find humor in these kinds of things. But like I was saying, though, I thought about it last night as James Worthy was talking about the last 5 years, whether it was under the previous head coach, whether it was under D'Antoni, whether it's been under Luke Walton these last six games or so. The effort has been inconsistent. The only consistent thing about the Lakers' last 5 years has been inconsistent
effort. They've been vomiting all over themselves on defense.
Right. And so it got me to thinking, what might be behind these trends? And these last six games, I think it's worth pointing out the stuff that Luke Walton was talking about. The injuries, the effect of the offense not putting the defense in a decent spot as nearly as often as it was before, and it wasn't like they were lighting the world on fire before either.
These are all things that you and I have talked about. Clearly, Luke is a Locked On Lakers listener, so thank you, Luke. We appreciate that.
Please subscribe and give us a review on iTunes. That'd be fun.
Yeah, if you could give us a shout out like post game press conference, that'd be cool too. But mm-hmm. Not going to force your hand.
So I looked beyond the on court stuff to try to find to see what kinds of trends, because if this is a trend, if the effort being inconsistent has been a trend for going on half of a decade now, then something must be behind it, right?
Yeah, I think Staples Center is clearly built on an Indian burial ground.
It's good to know. We should maybe go eat some fried chicken there instead of sacrificing a live chicken, go with the major league strategy and eat some fried chicken on the grounds. But what I landed on was this process that the Lakers have been going down, right? We are now in year five of a rebuild that, yes, it was youth has played a major role in it as they have drafted the Julius Randles and the D'Angelo Russells and the Jordan Clarksons and on down the line. But it's also featured mediocre to bad veteran role players, one-year contracts, guys who, especially as seasons roll along, are thinking more about where their next destination might be and less about what's the best way to fix the defense as it comes apart, right? And so...
I think that's as big of a factor as any, is they keep having guys that are on one-year deals. Mm-hmm. And those are not the kind of guys that say, I'm going to sacrifice my body, I'm going to buy in defensively, I need to make some business decisions here, mm-hmm. especially if the team's not winning. And I think that's human nature, and that's understandable. And I don't know that, like, it's easy to yell at guys for that and say, like, oh, like, you don't know what it means to be a Laker. But, like, if you were in any other job, you would feel the same way if your employer was not committing to you. You would not go and, like, you know, throw yourself in front of, like, a moving car for them or something like that. Like, you're going to make some business decisions and do what's best for you.
And look, this isn't to excuse it. So oftentimes when you explain behavior, it gets taken as excusing the behavior. Professionalism from professional athletes should still and can still be expected regardless of situation. I think that's always going to remain the case. And
I agree. I'm trying to get at the reasoning, maybe.
Right. And so what I'm doing is I'm explaining it, though. I too agree. I agree that if I was Julius Randle, look, I've gone this season. In this season alone, I heading into this year, I worked out in back alleys and flipped tires to transform my body and be able to try to play 30 minutes a game, right? And I've done all this while the fan base largely craps on me, right? The Lakers fan base doesn't respect this guy for the talent that he is. And this is also after he came back from breaking a leg to remain as good a player as he was before he broke it, right? Or a better player than before he broke it.
By far a better player.
And so all of these things are taking place while his minutes are yanked around. He's going to be a free agent. He's a new father, so he has to figure out what's best for his family, by the way, which is something that fans tend to ignore, that these guys are actual human beings with these kinds of same questions that you and I face on a day-to-day basis. And so
I constantly wonder how I'm going to support my children. And, I do my best for Grant Goldberg, but it doesn't always work out.
So Randle is getting yanked around with his minutes, and there was some where he played single digits, there was some where he played in the tens and the teens. There's some where he plays 30 minutes and he shows out. He was, for most of the season, easily the most impactful Laker out there. And yet, because he isn't a part of this this process that the Lakers are working with, he gets overlooked, whether it's by the front office, whether it's by Luke and rotations, whether it's by the fan base itself. He gets overlooked. And if I'm Randall and I'm looking at the situation and I'm looking at it beyond this season, I'm saying, you know what? Screw this. I worked my ass off the court and then now on it to be a good defensive player. It didn't do me jack. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to focus on the counting stats. That's going to get me paid this upcoming offseason. And again, I'm not excusing the behavior. It isn't particularly professional, but it's an explanation for it, and it's a viable explanation for it. And I can't necessarily fully blame him for thinking that way. And you can go on down the vast majority of the Lakers who have been a part of this process.
You said it last night. It was basically, we were talking about this. It's Ball, it's Kuzma, and it's Ingram that mm-hmm. feel like they're 100% guaranteed part of the core going forward. Everybody else, like, they're not a future Laker. You know, like, the future Lakers are coming in free agency this season, and then they're going to see who else is going to fit in around them.
Yeah, they played a future Laker last night. The talk after that game wasn't – the talk this season.
I'm starting to wonder if anybody went to the home locker room after that game. I think they all went to go talk to Paul George.
Hashtag press on. But what it comes down to is – and this is one of the things that I've been saying all season – is that the selling point – so people kind of mocked Russell Westbrook last night for saying that his selling pitch is going to be the championship that they win, right? And that's an extreme...
I certainly did.
Yeah, I mocked him. I said that I went out and bought a Paul George jersey because they aren't going to win a championship this year.
Yeah, but I said that somebody asked me, like, oh, you think that girl's going to leave you? I'm like, I'm going to be rich blogging. Beat that pitch.
Exactly, you know?
Both of those things have equal chances of happening.
So, but on a very simple level, that's the way that the Lakers should have gone about their sales pitch to Paul George, their sales pitch to LeBron. James Harden enabled the Rockets to get Chris Paul, right? Kyrie Irving enabled the Cavs to get LeBron James back. You go on down the line and all of these things. Paul George accepts a trade or is okay with, I guess he didn't really have a choice, but the reason there's even a chance that Paul George might stick around in OKC is because he's surrounded by Russell Westbrook and, to a lesser extent, Carmelo Anthony. Steph Curry enabled the Warriors and Draymond Green and Klay Thompson enabled the Warriors to acquire Kevin Durant. And what the Lakers keep messing up here and what it's led to is, like I wrote in the article, this inconsistent effort. But what the Lakers keep on doing is they keep on thinking that, okay, we'll just land the first domino and it's going to work out from there. But that first domino is really hard to get when the
kind of have to get it internally.
Well, it's hard to get that first domino if the domino himself is the story after you play them. The story this season should be about the promise that Lonzo Ball shows, the promise that Julius Randle has showed, Ingram has showed, and on down the line across this roster. Right, the B-ball breakdown guy, Coach Nick, made a video that got mocked up and down Twitter because he said that the Lakers have the best front office in the NBA, and his premise for that was how well they have drafted. Now, you kind of ignore the fact that Mitch Kupchak and Jim Buss were responsible for the majority of the picks that he mentioned.
I don't know if that's totally fair. I think the Lakers scouting department probably has a lot to do with it and still has a lot. Just like I don't think it would be fair to give Magic and Pelinka credit for this draft class. I think that that's a lot more the scouting department than people realize. And I think any good GM would admit that.
Yep. And so it got mocked, though, because that's basically the only thing this front office has done right, has done inarguably right.
That's not true. They only got fined for tampering once.
Right.
They learned their lesson. They didn't do it again.
This wasn't this front office, but the previous front office didn't interview anybody else other than Luke Walton for their head coaching search. Jeannie Buss didn't do any of a job search before she landed on Magic Johnson and Rob Pelinka. So yeah, I mean, there are questions about this front office, but what it comes back to is, look, this trend, this process that the Lakers are on, and the thing that it's produced has been the inconsistency that drove James Worthy insane. You actually see the pain behind his eyes as he's talking about this Lakers organization.
James Worthy legitimately cares every single game how this team is doing. And that is honestly – James Worthy might be the biggest Laker fan of all time.
And kudos to him. Props to him for it. And
he still cares, like, probably as much as when he was playing. It's like – it's almost scary, like, how into these games he is.
It's great. I mean, we've been to how many of those blogger nights there at Spectrum?
We've been to two, going again this week.
So every time we go there and James Worthy is there, for one thing, he's the only constant other than Geeter in the pre and post game stuff, right? So he's the only one, he's the only voice who's been around there talking about the Lakers, and that dates back to the KCAL 9 days.
Yeah, James Worthy is the Kobe Bryant of Lakers post game shows.
And so what you have is clips like you saw last night after the Thunder loss, and where he's looking for reasons behind this trend of inconsistency. When they asked about the rotations and why Julius Randle isn't playing, that was another very honest analysis of the situation in which he said, I have no idea why this guy isn't playing more, or why his minutes are fluctuating. It makes no sense to me, right?
No, James Worthy does not hold back. Asterisk, unless the coach is the last coach before Luke Walton.
Is a close personal friend.
Almost very nearly got fined there.
but would you ride with the theory then that so if the Lakers strike out on free agents this year, superstar free agents this year, and they go into next season with the same thinking that they're gonna kick their cap space down the line. Well, then,
my dog is already, I don't know if you can hear him, he is already upset by this plan and this possibility.
If that is how this all plays out, right, that would lead me to believe that this time next year, we're having the same exact freaking conversation about the defense, right? Like, that's how this plays out if they don't get anybody this year.
Why can the Lakers not build a solid defense on one-year veteran contracts?
the roster...
It's a mystery.
The roster the last 5 years has been made up of guys on rookie deals or on one-year deals. And the only exceptions to that
rookies and guys trying to pump up their offensive numbers to get paid? How have they not had a better defense the last couple of years?
So... I don't know how this gets fixed. It probably can't get fixed this year, and it really can't get fixed until this upcoming offseason. But until they move away from this trend, this process that they're on, this ill-fated thus far process that they've been on, I'm sorry, man. These problems are going to linger around the Lakers, and it sucks. It really does suck.
Yeah, I don't care, but it's like I know you do, and I know our listeners do, and I'm sorry, guys.
Freaking Spock over there. All right. That'll do it.
I say this stuff. I honestly on some level believe that, like, feel this way, but I also say it just to get a rise out of you.
My fist clenched.
Every single time. I know your fist clenched because they do it when we're in person, and it's hilarious.
Fist bump. Do you want to make fun of Paul Pierce really quickly and send people off into the weekend with a chuckle?
Not that I need a reason to make fun of Paul Pierce, but like why specifically?
So Isaiah Thomas was supposed to get a video tribute last night in his first night back in Boston since being traded to the Cleveland Cavaliers. He asked that they do not make that video tribute. I think it was because his parents weren't going to be able to make it in town, and he wanted his parents there to be able to watch that, which seems like a fair reason.
Seems reasonable.
For me. Yeah. The next time that he is in Boston, they had already scheduled Paul Pierce's retirement, his jersey retirement, ceremony, and Paul Pierce did not take kindly to the idea of an Isaiah Thomas tribute on or during his night. That's about as lame as it gets, right?
Do you think that he was so hurt by it that he's going to get in a wheelchair unnecessarily and have to be wheeled out for his jersey retirement for absolutely no reason, despite the ability to walk and probably run?
if they don't utilize a wheelchair, like if at no point that night a wheelchair is brought out, then I don't know. Like Boston's already an organization of F boys, but that right there would be pretty lame.
I don't know why that just made me laugh so hard.
The other thing, I had a tweet that's doing a little bit of work right now, but all right, fine, Paul. We won't honor Isaiah Thomas with 3 minutes on your night, but they definitely have to honor Kevin Garnett, right? Like Paul Pierce is a career loser without Kevin Garnett in his stepping in at some point to bail him out.
They should put an asterisk on all of Paul Pierce's jersey, and then below all of the retired jerseys, just say "Brought to you by Kevin Garnett."
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, if he wears, I think there is an asterisk.
Superstar.
Yeah, I think there is an asterisk on his championship ring. Like, this ring would not be on my hand if not for Kevin Garnett.
Seriously, he acts like he was like Paul Pierce was a good player, but like, where did he lead the Celtics before Kevin Garnett? I'm like, chill out, man. Like, Isaiah Thomas led them as far as you did, without like a superstar help.
Maybe further?
Yeah, well, no, Isaiah Thomas was also, like, he didn't have a player on his team with the Celtics the caliber of the players of either Ray Allen or Kevin Garnett. And Isaiah Thomas was a better player during his years with the Celtics than Paul Pierce was, just if you're, like, just looking at stats. Like, obviously not at, like, overall long-term impact, but he was.
I don't know.
I don't think that's even a hot take.
I don't know if Paul Pierce got to the conference finals without.
I'm pretty sure they made it to him and Antoine Walker made the conference finals one year.
Once, right? Yes. They got beat by New Jersey.
If I remember correctly, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So.
And like, hey, that's not nothing. But like, dude, come on, just chill out, man. Isaiah's like better than you.
That was one year in the what, 17 or 18 that Paul Pierce was there, whereas Isaiah Thomas in his one year got them to the.
Well, he was there like Isaiah Thomas was there like 2.5 years, but
okay, but he's still batting at a higher percentage.
Yeah.
So,
second. Hey, I'm all for Paul Pierce slander, and I, you know, personally, I kind of like Isaiah Thomas. Like, it was kind of like it was crappy that he was a Celtic, and like, hey, good for him, he moved on.
Yeah, I'm really happy that Isaiah Thomas is not a Celtic anymore.
Seems like an eminently likable person, and I respect anybody who is that size and can go out there and get buckets like that.
Yeah, yeah, and I respect anybody who gives Paul Pierce a reason to show how further a piece of crap he is.
Yeah, I think we can all get with that.
Yeah. All right, so the last words...
Oh, my God, Paul Pierce.
the last words...
That is the pettiest thing I've ever... I don't want a video tribute for him. This is my night. Wah.
Yeah, he's such a douche. I hate him so much.
Oh, come on. Do I have to bleep that?
Douche is fine. No.
Okay.
No.
Okay. Well, we aren't going to have this debate on the podcast.
And honestly, if the SEC got all angry and we told them, look, we're talking about Paul Pierce, they'd say you should have used a stronger word.
Wait, the SEC?
FCC.
Okay. I was like, all right, I don't think you understand how communications work.
No, the FCC. No, the SEC, the University of Alabama, is going to step in and say something to it.
Nick Saban is coming to your house to beat you.
All right, that'll do it then. I wanted to make sure we send everybody into the weekend with a laugh. We all get to laugh at Paul Pierce at any point. Honestly, just if you just tweet out F Paul Pierce, your day is made instantly better. Immediately better.
I can't argue with that.
Yeah. All right, have a great weekend, everybody. We'll be back at it again. I have a guest lined up for Monday and Tuesday. Harrison will be at the day spa. Actually,
for Tuesday and Wednesday.
Yeah.
Tuesday and Wednesday. Yeah. I will be here on Monday.
Yeah, so Monday's show is going to be a lot of fun. I'm not going to go into the guests that we have lined up for there because I don't like jinxing it, but Tuesday's show especially, the show that we're recording Tuesday for Wednesday is going to be a really good one, so you're not going to want to miss it.
Mainly because I'm not there.
Yeah, I can't.
You're welcome, America.
I can't argue. Have a great one, everybody.